This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
We watch them to laugh. We watch them to cry. We watch them so we can feel that gingerbread feeling. But mostly, we watch them over and over and over again. Holiday movies tend to make deep impressions on us. Maybe it's because we associate them with the best parts of a special time of year, or perhaps it's because they're something everyone in the family can watch in lieu of choking each other out in front of the mashed potatoes. There are scores of big screen gems set during the end of the year holidays. So the great pop culture debate wants to know, what is the best holiday film? I lost the role of Tiny Tim in IBC's Christmas Carol to that bitch Mary Lou Retton. I'm your host, Eric Resniak. Please help me welcome today's panelists who will be playing the disgruntled elves to my bad Santa. If he woke up tomorrow with his head sewn to the carpet, he wouldn't be more surprised than he is to be on this panel right now. It's Bob Erlenbach.
Hallelujah. Holy shit. Where's the Tylenol?
She traveled through seven levels of the candy cane forest and walked through the Lincoln Tunnel just to be here. It's Joelle Bodecker.
It's Santa. I know him. I know him.
And he knows you. Have you been a good little girl this year, Joelle?
I've tried.
Ugh. Liar.
Yeah. Give it up. And his heart wasn't the only thing to grow three sizes that day. Please welcome back Michael Schwartz.
I swear to God, it's COVID weight.
Oh, I thought you were going someplace a little bit more salty with that, but sure, we'll go with that one too. So how does this work? Since this is a mini-sode, there was no public poll. Our panelists created individual lists of their favorite holiday movies. We were broad in our interpretation of holiday movie, by the way. It just had to relate to one of the end of the year holidays and have a theatrical release. We found which picks had multiple votes and added those to a bracket. Now we argue about it and insult each other, all for your amusement. Looking for made-for-TV holiday specials? We covered those last year, and you can find that episode right now on your podcast platform of choice. Now, if you want to play along at home, you can go to greatpopculturedebate.com and find the Polls and Brackets tab. There you'll find the listener bracket for this and every episode of our show. Make a copy of it for yourself, fill it out, and see if your picks line up with ours. So before we start, I know that I am on the naughty list with some of my panelists for not putting certain holiday films on this bracket. Who wants to air their grievances? I'm going to start with Joelle because I know she's got some thoughts.
All right. It's my Festivus. I'm yep. here.
Yep. I brought out the poll. It's going to wrestle after this. So let's go.
I'm just going to start and apologize to everyone listening that there's just not enough warm, family-friendly movies on this list. And that's because there's just a lot of cold boys on this podcast. I don't know what happened.
It's true.
Yeah, true.
I think the term you're looking for is bitches.
I know. I didn't want to call you bitches because I don't know all of you that well. I know two of you that well.
It's accurate.
Oh, I'm like Eric. You're fine by calling me whatever.
Exactly.
Then here we are. Bunch of bitches on this podcast.
Yep.
Thank you.
I am one that loves a holiday rom-com. I love them. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm not talking about the Hallmark ones. I'm talking about the theatrically released ones from the 90s. The ones that launched 1,000 shitty Hallmark movies. Mm. The ones that launched 1,000 shitty Netflix movies. The ones that will be talking about one day in the future. We're talking about your While You Were Sleepings, The Holiday, the Home for the Holidays wasn't terrible at all. Those are the top three on my list, but going all the way back to like Sleepless in Seattle, that was technically a Christmas movie, the first half. You've Got Mail, Christmas to Christmas-ish, sure. Right?
Yeah.
Bridget Jones's Diary, another Christmas to Christmas movie.
Okay.
When Harry Met Sally, what?
Yeah, I was going to say, Bridget Jones's Diary is actually great. And I had not even thought of it as a Christmas music, but you're right. It is, totally is.
I know that one caught me off guard because there's, you know, some of those movies, they span a full year. So you kind of forget that they're Christmas movies.
Yes.
Same thing with When Harry Met Sally. That one spans so many years, but it ends on New Year's. And that's such a significant moment. And then there's Serendipity. That one's another one that spans two Christmases between 5 years. There's so many of these movies that I've watched over and over and over again. And when I want to get in the holiday spirit, I watch those movies more than I watch just about everything that we're about to talk about. So that's just a grain of salt before we get into this bracket. But I will say that some of the movies on this bracket, I do have plenty of nostalgia for, and I will talk honestly about them. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure people listening understand where I'm coming from.
Which is important. I always get the feedback that people need to understand our rubric. So you're really looking more for the good-natured, warm and fuzzy, romantic comedy type of film.
And if even if not romantic, just the family one. So While You Were Sleeping is that half family, half rom-com. There's also that adorable movie Prancer from way back in the 90s that's just about saving a reindeer. It's just a sweet family little story. All I Want for Christmas is sort of a rom-com, but it's really about two kids trying to get their parents back together. And it's really just about adorable little Ethan Embry and what's her face? Oh, I already forgot her name.
Little what's her face?
Yep. Ghost World. What's her name?
Thora Birch.
Thora Birch. Little Thora Birch. The cutest version of Thora Birch that ever existed.
Yeah.
Both of them in that movie were very cute. Anyway, that was 1991. I recommend it for anyone looking for a great little rom-com / family movie for Christmas.
Excellent. Thank you, Joelle. Michael, what about you?
So I'm going to represent some categories in Christmas movies that are often... Well, one of them is often overlooked for Christmas movies, and the other one is, I don't know what I'm doing on a panel of heathens that didn't make this list, for God's sake.
Oh, here we go.
Soapbox.
Says the chief heathen.
Here's the soapbox, ready.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Soapbox down, standing up. Okay, how do we get to this selection of films when there is, and I'm going to use this very mildly, there is only one A Christmas Carol version on this entire list.
Sure.
And it's one. But literally, we don't have a traditional Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. And for me, a traditional Christmas Carol is 1952 Alistair Sims playing Ebenezer Scrooge. That is my go-to version of A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there have been so many different versions of A Christmas Carol that have been made over the years. And how do we not have a Muppets Christmas Carol up here, for God's sakes? I am like beside myself that this has been missed.
I got to tell you, and I'm sure the people listening right now are clutching their pearls. They are agog. I am too, folks. I don't know how it didn't make the list. I didn't put it on my list, though. I guess I'm partially to blame.
Neither did I.
Yeah. So in general, I blame Bob.
Okay.
So,
yeah, no, you know, it really should have been on Bob's list because I watched it for the first time this year. I never saw it in my childhood. And I watched,
you loved it, didn't you?
I watched it and I was like, yeah, it's okay.
And I have to say,
I had just watched A Muppet's Haunted House, and that was way better.
So that's the problem.
Okay, before we even get started, for everybody who knows, this is the first time Joelle and I have been on a panel together. You're dead to me.
It was a short-lived friendship.
Don't worry, Joelle. He always says that.
We're never going to see that Broadway musical.
No, I'd rather be locked in a room with Amy Pilot and some, you know, grape nuts, for God's sake. Anyhow, the other category of films that I want to say did not get a good representation on here. There's only one in the bracket, really, but it is the horror Christmas films. You know, the ones that like I know that I missed one of these when I made my original list. And so part of it's on me that I don't think anybody showed up for. The first one that I think really should have been on here is Anna and the Apocalypse.
Yes. I just wrote that down yesterday. I was like, how did I forget about that one?
Yeah. So I forgot about it too. And like, this is kind of my genre. So my rubric is I tend to like off kilter, non-traditional Christmas movies or holiday movies in general. So whereas like Joelle is very like the rom-com kind of thing, I am like the weirder, the better. I'm okay with that kind of shit. Oh, I forgot.
Fine.
We're fine. This is not suitable for work. But Anna and the Apocalypse, I think it's a great one. It is, you know, a Christmas movie meets zombie movie meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer once more with feeling kind of thing. And it is amazing.
I've heard nothing but good things. I've not yet watched it, but I've heard amazing things.
Well, you've got until the end of the year to figure that out. And the other one that was like near and dear and top of my heart that I think is an amazing Christmas horror film, because not only is it just well done, but it has got such an amazing story behind it too, is Krampus. I can't tell whether that was I'm frustrated with you or I agree with you.
Eric, you know I love Krampus.
Yes, yes.
And I couldn't with the movie. I was like, oh God, I wish that had been better. But anyway,
okay, you'll have your soapbox in a minute.
It's got it's got a great cast.
It does. I think it's really. I think it's a really great Christmas film. You know, dysfunctional family. Everybody's going to hell. You know, I get all behind that. You know, Drag Me to Hell with snowflakes falling behind it. So, and you know, being German myself, Krampus is like just a very important part of my cultural heritage as well. So, I think that more people need to take a moment and look at horror Christmas films at this time of year. So step down, soapbox put away.
Thank you. That's actually great. And I think it's a good idea, Michael, maybe you and I offline can work up a list of Christmas horror films. And Joelle, you can give me a list of Christmas romance films. Mm-hmm. And we can have some supplemental materials to put onto this on social media. Like, here are our panelists' top five in those categories that didn't make our bracket. Absolutely. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, alternatives to the bracket.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Alternate facts.
And now we're ready to hear what Bob has to say.
Before we get to that, I do want to point out, though, just as a sidebar, I love Krampus. And one of the very first public events I ever did back in Rochester, I want to say 2015. No, earlier than that.
It was like 2010, 2011.
It was a long time ago. It was like seven or 8 years ago, I think, right?
Yeah. We put on Breakfast with Krampus. Which was an alternative to Breakfast with Santa, because there are 5 million Breakfast with Santas everywhere. And we decided the way that it was going to happen, we had a community center that allowed us to take over. We had a full-on Krampus costume that my older brother, in the role he was born to play, a demon who beats and berates people. You came with a free gift to donate to children. And if Krampus thought your gift was suitable, then you got a free breakfast item. And there was like a little holiday shop with local artists. And if you didn't bring a gift, or if Krampus thought your gift was shitty, he would make fun of you in front of the crowd, like people were filling pews, and he would beat you with his stick. And it was a gas. It was amazing. I would have loved to do it again. Maybe we will sometime.
Eric, you can't see this right now, but my hand is raised really high in the air. I will find and pay for that Krampus outfit myself to do that.
We would need Krampus version 2.0, because I'm pretty sure Krampus 1.0 was, first of all, ruined by the stink of my brother, and secondly, eaten by various creatures in the Kara Austin basement. So,
well, I know. I'll do it better than Brian did anyway.
I'm sure you will.
I have the strangest fun fact. Yesterday, Facebook told me that you and I have a friendiversary. Oh. And the picture that it showed me for our friendiversary was my cat. And I was like, this is strange. You have never met my cat, Eric. This is just a truth that is universally known. But I looked at the picture and I zoomed in really far and I found a tiny pin. A Krampus pin. Yeah. I believe in Krampus pin sitting behind my cat. And that's why I had tagged you in that photo.
Amazing. Amazing. So maybe we will have a crampling reunion. So anyway,
ooh, I love that.
There's their sidebar. Sorry to go off topic. Bob, what about you? What films did you wish were on the bracket?
I unfortunately missed that Breakfast with Krampus. Mm. Ugh, I had already moved away.
DC, yeah.
Yeah.
Come back when we do it, Bob. I'll beat you with a stick. Yeah, okay.
So there wasn't, okay, maybe I shouldn't say this. There wasn't a ton of movies from my list that didn't make it.
Humblebrag.
That's a deep burn.
the bracket. If you're all still raw about it when you're older, I'll be waiting. one that I was surprised didn't, and maybe I think I was the only one to put it on my list, was Meet Me in St. Louis. Mm. I had actually only really watched this movie recently, and I loved it. I was like, I haven't seen this before. It's often associated with the holidays. It's featured prominently in one of the holiday movies from our bracket. And I had never seen it until recently, and I was like, wow, this is really good. And it's the movie that has clang, clang, clang with the trolley, et cetera.
Ring, ring, ring with the bells. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it surprised. A holiday movie, like mostly, or is it just have a couple holiday songs in it?
It's many holidays, actually. It's like every holiday.
Yeah. It's like, it's like every season, every holiday.
So it's like it's an Easter. It's a
Halloween,
yeah,
absolutely. Easter. The Halloween flag part day. Of that movie is amazing, actually.
Guy Fawkes Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was surprised that didn't make it on. But then the one that I was really hoping would make it on, and I knew it probably never would, was I'll Be Home for Christmas, starring Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Oh my God.
I know how Joelle feels about it. She hate watched it one day.
I hated it from beginning to end. Awful.
Yeah, well, I'm with you.
It's not good. And I knew it wouldn't make the bracket, but I love it for some reason, maybe because of the JTT nostalgia. I don't know.
I look forward to telling you, Bob, which movie on this bracket my husband liked that movie more than because he watched that movie and went, this isn't that bad, and I went, okay. And then we watched a popular movie on this bracket, and he went, I like that JTT movie better.
Uh-oh. Wow.
So
I'm very curious as to what that's
future spoiler.
So, you know, that was really what it came down to for me was just the JTT of it all. But, and then another movie that I had on my list too was Grumpy Old Men, which has, which features Christmas in it. And that's just an amazing movie. Aww. All around with
Burgess Meredith.
Yeah. Burgess Meredith is amazing in that movie.
Yes.
He is so funny.
Yes.
So filthy. So amazing.
Looks like old one eye is going to take the boat to Tuna Town. Yep. Holy shit. Every line out of his mouth is amazing in that movie.
Should
be called Dirty Old Men. It's brilliant. Should.
Yeah. Well,
so that was it.
Speaking of Burgess Meredith and the Penguin, one of the ones that I was sad to make the list was Batman Returns, which is unquestionably a Christmas film. The whole thing set during Christmas. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised it didn't make it. We only had 16 for this bracket, folks. So, you know, decisions had to be made. But I do love the kind of ridiculous, over-the-top Gotham, like 1920s style gaucheness of their Christmas. That's the Christmas I wish I could live every day. Bats coming out of a gigantic tree downtown, slaughtering Miss Merry Christmas. That's what I want out of my holiday season. Also, speaking of terrible films that I knew wouldn't make the list, but I still have intense nostalgia for, does anybody besides me, or was this a fever dream, remember the 1980s Santa Claus the Movie?
Yes, 100%.
With
I remember that.
Dudley Moore. John Lithgow devouring every inch of scenery. There is nothing left. And a plot that involved magic puce candy canes. It's not good. It's objectively terrible. But as a kid, I was obsessed with it because I was a kid like when it came out. And I was like, this is the movie about Santa Claus. This is what I want. Terrible, but still something I do love. And I'm suspecting other 80s kids are with me on that. And then finally, GPCD panelist Amy Pilot, hi Amy, put in a good word for the Christmas Chronicle films.
Yeah.
Which are on
the
Netflix.
First one.
I personally have not seen them.
I'm not going to talk about the second one, but the first one was a fun watch.
Were those theatrical?
No, they were Netflix only.
And that is the challenge, right? Because they are feature length films, but they were maybe they had a limited theatrical release. That's what I was going to check on.
I don't know that they did.
I don't know.
Netflix.
Yeah. But Kurt Russell is Daddy AF in those movies and has certified delight Goldie Hawn. So I'm sure they're great. They may have just been made for TV and we weren't including those in this list. Or I also think they were just a little bit too recent to make the list. So with that being said, let's dip into the eggnog and get on to the actual debates. Our panel unanimously decided that National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation should hop on its supersonic sled and shoot past Miracle on 34th Street. I know that Joelle and Michael actually both nominated Miracle. They just nominated different versions of it. I know we've already kind of gotten 20 minutes into this, any actual debates, but does anybody want to say anything about their version of Miracle quickly?
I did want to say I actually had the opportunity to watch both of them. I did a little double feature of both Miracles. And I don't like either of them now. I found both Santas to be truly awful. They made me dislike Santa. They made me find Christmas to be as consumerist as I ever imagined it to be. And did you know the first movie was entirely sponsored by Macy's, the original?
Oh, yeah.
I never watched the original. I watched the remake, which was a fake Macy's called Kohl's. C-O-L-E apostrophe S.
Oh, not Kohl's Cash, Kohl.
No. Kohl's Cash. It is Christmas.
If you're
not
going
for late 90s and beyond Kohl's, but the C-O-L-E Kohl's.
Okay.
Totally different, not sponsored by Macy's. But yeah, I found both Santa Claus to be incredibly rude and pretentious and not very magical. So... I'm good with it going away.
Michael?
I think that like it ends up on my list for pure nostalgia reasons, but like the original 1947 version, Edmund Gwenn is literally what becomes the archetype of who Santa really is for the modern day. You know, I think that he plays it, but he like physically, he kind of like embodies a lot of what we all eventually become to know is what is the modern day Santa for us. So
I will say the 1994 Santa is John Hammond from Jurassic Park. So that's delightful.
I kept thinking through the whole thing. Thinking,
I know. I just wanted to put a little Jurassic hat on him. little shorts on him.
He's got candy canes with mosquitoes embedded in them.
I watched it this podcast too. And I thought it made a like really bad Law and Order episode.
Or The Practice. Yeah.
That would have been hilarious if it had Chung Chung in between.
And I still don't understand why Santa was living at like a homeless place. I still don't understand. If you're really Santa, why are you living there? But whatever.
Yeah. I mean, Santa had anger issues. It was a lot. I just couldn't handle it.
He is canonically a ginger, and so I think that might have something to do with it. But anyway, moving on. 3/4 of the panel preferred Kevin McAllister's first Ghosted Christmas in Home Alone, but Michael said, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, and wanted to blow shit up by choosing Die Hard. Joelle, why is Michael an angel with a filthy soul? Michael, explain why Die Hard is not just a Christmas movie, but one of the best Christmas movies. And I'm going to have Joelle go first.
I'm not going to go too deep on this because it is 3-1. So I'm going to save a little bit for later.
Save the juice.
But I will say, Home Alone became an instant classic. It came out, no one was expecting it to do as well as it did. I think it came out at that perfect mid-November time. It was that Thanksgiving movie. And then for the rest of the 90s, it showed up every Thanksgiving on broadcast television. It became this movie that people expected to kick off the holiday season. It is it for people in my generation. I'm a few years younger than most of you. For people in my generation, I know, shots fired. I'm a whole 3 years younger than some of you. it became the beginning of the holiday season, and for that alone, it is synonymous with holiday movies.
I think it is the millennials' cinematic version of Mariah Carey, right? Like defrost Mariah, and we get out the Home Alone DVD.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a ton I can talk about, the Chris Columbus of it all, the music, everything. I'll get into so much of it if I need to, but I want to hear what Michael has to say.
Yeah, I want to hear Michael's argument on Die Hard. Go for it, Michael.
Now I'm just going to hope that the microphone picks this up. Yawn. So, okay. Picture it. Los Angeles, 1988.
I did.
Exactly. And okay, this I think feeds back into a lot of things that people said during the what films missed the thing. This is not, Christmas movies do not have to be literal Christmas movies for them to be Christmas movies.
Sure.
So like we talked about, like Joel, you mentioned Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail and a lot of those rom-coms of the 90s that they have a little Christmas influence. This is all about Christmas. This happens at Christmas time for you. Bruce Willis, Alan Rickman, Nakamura Chower, explosions, gunfights, you know, bad German accents. It's one of these few action films that are set in Christmas that have endured. You know, again, this is another genre of Christmas movies that people don't think about. Like horror movies don't think about Christmas. Action movies, you're not thinking about Christmas in any way, shape, or form. Home Alone's good, but give me something that's going to get my heart racing. Okay. You know, and I think that Die Hard, and I'm dying on this hill. I am not changing my vote, but I doubt I'm going to change any of your minds. But it really is. Yeah, it's just a great movie to begin with. And it happened to be set at Christmas. And it is something that I will watch maybe 2 times during the holiday season this year, while getting in the rest of my holiday fix for everything else.
I appreciate the strong argument. I don't appreciate the Bonnie Bedelia erasure. I'll just put that out there.
Yeah, no mention. No mention at all.
Holly Gennaro, please.
Holly Gennaro.
No, but in all honesty, I love Die Hard. It's a great movie, and I am a firm believer that it is a Christmas film. I echo everything you say. It is an awesome action film, and I'm not taking away any of its flowers. It's just up against Home Alone. And to me, if you're saying, which one of these two are you going to watch? It's the holiday season. I'm going to pick Home Alone. Bob, where are you on this one?
Yeah, I'm with Home Alone 2. Home Alone is actively being a Christmas movie, and I don't believe that Die Hard is. It just happens to be a movie that takes place at Christmas, and we can tie it in for those reasons. I don't see them trying to deliver any of the Christmas spirit or the Christmas joy to me in any way, like Home Alone might.
I mean, that's actually what's so unfortunate. I actually would have voted for Die Hard against a lot of other movies on this list, but just not Home Alone.
I will agree with that, honestly, Michael. If it was up against two or three other films, I easily would have voted for Die Hard here. It's just up against Home Alone. And that was the luck.
Oh, I know. I knew I wasn't going to change any of your minds. You know, you've all been brainwashed by the commercialism of capitalism for Christmas. But
it's true. The media decided this was our movie, and it is our movie, you know.
There's something about Home Alone that like it can happen to you, right? And it's every person's family and, you know, all of those things. Like it's relatable in those ways. And I can't relate to Die Hard in any ways because I'm never going to be in a building like that.
I'm never going to have those skills. I'm never going to be able to save a tower. I just can't. And
you guys are all good.
Will best me in that moment. He just will.
But sometimes somebody should take the red pill, Neo. Take the red pill.
All right. So it sounds like we are advancing Home Alone. As a quick plug, the Movies That Made Us on Netflix has episodes devoted to both of those films.
Yes.
Super interesting. Recommend that you watch them because there's a lot of really cool behind the scenes details. Like Home Alone barely got made. It's so interesting. Next up, the majority of the panel appreciated the Feet of Clay, that is The Nightmare Before Christmas, but I prefer the jubilant song and dance filled White Christmas. Bob, explain why Nightmare is your dream holiday movie, while I argue why all our Christmases should be white. And Bob, I'm going to have you go first.
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, it is Nightmare Before Christmas. There's a lot of nostalgia, I think, associated with all the movies on this bracket, right? It's going to be hard for us to separate just the nostalgia and what calls out to us specifically over another movie, right? That kind of clouded my judgment a lot through trying to come up with picks for these movies. It's just like, well, I just like this movie more. And I think in this case, that is where it's going to come down to between these two. But let's not ignore that Nightmare is an incredible film that took years to create. You can watch it year round. It covers multiple holidays. You can watch it for Halloween. You can watch it for Christmas. It also features some of the other holidays and other holiday characters in it as well. Beautifully shot, painstaking detail. Just the love that went into creating this movie is undeniable. Really a lot of my choice in just this pairing here is how much I hate White Christmas. and it's not special to me in any way. I feel like we have some songs cobbled together with a dull story with no acting whatsoever. It's, hi, I'm Bing Crosby and I'm Danny F and K. Mm-hmm. Sitting here showing you I can sing and dance. Big fucking deal. I have zero nostalgia for it. Kids, I don't even know children would I can't imagine children would watch this and like it. Maybe you did, Eric. Like,
no.
I don't know. I'm anxious to hear your argument.
Yes,
I am
for
so looking forward to this.
That is White Christmas.
I'm so glad that you asked. So, actually, no, I didn't like White Christmas the first time I saw it. And in fact, for those at home, please get your drinks ready. The first time I saw it was with you, Bob, when we watched it in chorus in high school, because it was that period after we did the holiday concert, but before holiday break started. So they had nothing to do with us. And it was like, here, watch some movies on VHS. Because that was when they had VHS players. And I was like, this movie's fucking boring. Like, it's dull. As you said, like, it did not speak to me in any way. But I recently rewatched it with my partner's family over the holidays a couple years ago, pre-COVID. And I actually really loved it. It is the most old Hollywood of all of the movies on this list, I think. You've got Bing Crosby, you've got Danny Kaye, you've got Rosemary Clooney, you've got Vera Ellen. Like, these are just movie stars that are dripping with talent and charisma. And Bob is correct. They're not exactly doing heavy lifting on the acting, but they don't have to, because really they're almost kind of playing themselves. And one of the things that stuck out to me watching it most recently and why I didn't like it as a teenager is it's actually tackling some pretty heavy issues. What it was like for GIs coming back from World War II, and what is your life like now? After being like a general in the army, now you're supposed to go back and just be a regular dude in an office. So it's telling that story, but it's also song and dance men, right? Like, the production numbers in this movie are spectacular. The dancing is incredible. there are some great songs. I mean, White Christmas, duh, whatevs. But there are also some other really great ones. I have to address this because it's like you can't talk about this movie and not acknowledge it. There is a number in it called The Minstrel Show. Thankfully, it does not actively include blackface, but it is talking about going to see shows in which people perform in blackface, which is really uncomfortable and really awful. However, that sequence is amazing. The dancing that happens in that sequence is just incredible. Vera Ellen should have been a much bigger star than she was. But it's not the only one. The costumes in this are luxurious. The whole thing, it feels like a rich old Hollywood movie in a way that I think is going to appeal to anyone over the age of 50.
100.
Sure. Kids are not going to dig this movie at all. Kids are going to be like,
50 is generous. Definitely.
Yeah, okay. But like, if you're looking for something to put on while Nana gums her fruit bread, her fruit cake, I'm going to say go with White Christmas. I'm not going to convince anyone on this.
No,
so I'm
going to
go.
Not.
No, certainly not.
Michael, Nightmare?
Oh, okay. First of all, like, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. And like, 3 or 4 years ago, pre-pandemic, went and saw a live concert version of this at the Barclay Center, where it literally was Danny Elfman, Catherine O'Hara, you know, Ken Page, all up on stage, you know, singing live to an orchestra while the film played behind them. So if anything else in today's day and age, all we have to say is Catherine O'Hara is in this movie.
Yeah.
And she plays an amazing Sally, and she sings those. And the music is amazing. And it's a great story. There is, it's not just the fact that this is one of my favorite films. I think it is just so incredibly well done. Danny Elfman and Tim Burton bring this incredible story and visuals to life for us, as opposed to White Christmas.
I do need to point out a fallacy in your logic, because Catherine O'Hara was also in Home Alone, and you just talk shit all over that. So I'm just,
But she was in that, but she wasn't as an integral part as she was to Nightmare Before Christmas.
That's fair. And you know, I'm just yanking your chain.
Oh, I know that. No matter how wrong you might be.
And I'm
constantly
wrong.
It grew three sizes that day.
Joelle?
Well, so this is one of those movies, Nightmare Before Christmas, that I absolutely adore as a Halloween movie. It's a wonderful Halloween movie. I'm going to call it a Halloween movie for the rest of this conversation, because it is 100% a Halloween movie, despite its name. That said, White Christmas was completely unwatchable because it's a war movie that happens to have a few fun Christmas songs at the end. I hated that so much, beginning to end. Hate watched it. Everything Bob said, I thought he was walking through my head. I was like, wait, Bob, did we watch this together? Was this one of those things?
In spirit.
I truly hated it. I don't, like, I get what you said, Eric. I believe you. My husband saw what you saw. He was like, isn't it great? I was like, no.
No.
Anyway, Nightmare Before Christmas wins because it is a beautiful, wonderful movie for Halloween, and it's still a beautiful, wonderful movie in general, so it wins.
All right. Moving on, the panel was evenly split between Kevin McAllister's second Christmas spent nearly murdering escaped convicts and Katie Holmes passing the stuffing in the Thanksgiving set Pieces of April. Joelle, give us a piece of your mind on Pieces while I check into the Plaza Hotel and stump for Home Alone 2. I'm going to have Joelle go first.
So this is funny. Home Alone 2 was the one on my original list, and Home Alone 1 was not, because in my weird nostalgia of it all, I was like, New York City, oh, that's so much better than the original. It's great. And then I rewatched both, and I realized just how redundant the second one was. It was hitting all the same notes. There was a very little originality, despite the efforts of, you know, now we're in the Plaza Hotel, now we're amping up all the action and all of the excitement and things like that. I found a lot of the family antics to be way less enjoyable the second time around, and a lot of the thieves antics to be way less frightening the second time around. There were some, you know, obviously Christmas in New York moments that were wonderful, but all in all, Home Alone 2 was not as great as Home Alone 1. So that's all I'm going to say there. But let me talk about Pieces of April. This is the only Thanksgiving movie on our list. We tried. Yeah. I looked through everything in the world to find Thanksgiving movies. I found three. The only one I added to this list was I actually had two to my list. There was Home for the Holidays, which is a fantastic Thanksgiving movie. I also discovered Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is actually a pretty good Thanksgiving movie. Totally forgot about it until 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And then here's Pieces of April, which is a beloved, forgotten movie that we all kind of wax nostalgia about as we were putting this list together. At least Bob and I did. Mm-hmm. What I like about this movie is it feels like Thanksgiving from beginning to end. That feeling of trying to get home or trying to visit your family and that dread, that existential dread of, is this going to be the worst thing I've ever done ever? And will I make the worst meal? Will it be terrible when I get there? Do I like my family enough to go through all of this? Everyone, if you have a family, has gone through that. It is the most relatable movie you've ever watched from that capacity. There's just beautiful moments in there. The sick mother, Oliver Platt, just doing his absolute, like, most fantastic acting. I mean, he's done lots of great acting over the years, but I thought he was really great in this movie. Little baby Allison Pill is in this movie. Katie Holmes, not a great actress, but she held her best in it, the best she could. She lives in this fantastic, quirky building, and she's running around with a turkey, and it's just these classic Thanksgiving scenes that, like, the dual road trip. She's going through a road trip in her building, and they're going through a road trip through Connecticut, and as a kid that grew up in Connecticut, that felt pretty cool to me. I always bring up Connecticut and the fact that I'm a Jew on all of these podcasts. It just happens. So that one's that. There we go. Is that a drink? Is that something we should drink?
Check
to?
Box. Mm-hmm. Is Mark? Check box.
I don't know. This one just checks the boxes for me. I wanted a Thanksgiving movie on this list, and it definitely works for me. And we already have Home Alone making it through the bracket, and Home Alone 2 just doesn't feel like it needs to follow up.
So I'm glad you said that. Here's my thing. Hot take, Home Alone 2 is better than Home Alone 1. I understand what you're saying, that it is reductive because it takes the same beats from Home Alone 1, almost like one for one, but it makes them all better. The Bird Lady is way better than Old Man with a Bucket. The Brownstone of Death is a better trap than the McAllister House. The City of New York is a better setting than wherever the hell he is in Ohio. It's just, to me, it's everything that you loved about Home Alone 1, but amped up in a way that makes it better. And it's interesting that you find the burglars to be less threatening in this one, because I watched it again recently. I was like, this is genuinely terrifying. Like, they're threatening a child with a gun. Like, that doesn't happen in the first one. I'm like, this is really kind of unsettling. And if I watch this as like an 8-year-old, I think I'd be very scared. But then you watch like the actual abuse that he deals out to those kids. The bricks in the face scene is still, I will laugh every goddamn time one of those bricks hits those motherfuckers in the face. It is hilarious. And then the toilet filled with kerosene, splendiferous, amazing. And Tim Curry is the nosy hotel employee. It's great. It's great. That all being said, we're right now split, and I will throw my vote to Pieces of April, if only because having two Home Alones in the Elite Eight seems a little egregious to me. And so also Christmas is coming, and I'd like to give a gift to Katie Holmes, and she's not going to win anything else. So
also, can we just drop a few points to Home Alone 2 because of a certain cameo that shall remain nameless?
Yes, no, please.
I know.
I had it in my notes.
Ugh, it makes me like it.
Say anything about it.
What I also had in my notes was, he's not home and he's not alone. Exactly sure what we're talking about here.
You know, there was actually this moment at the end of the movie. I was watching this and I was like, okay, but he could have escaped that time and that time, but he stuck around so he could really fuck with those thieves. Whereas in the first movie, like, he was stuck in his house defending his house. But mm-hmm. like in the second movie, he could have left that brownstone like 55 times. He wasn't like defending it.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's how he became the Punisher. Like, I know maybe you didn't get that note, but yes, that's how he became a serial vigilante. Michael, are you sticking with Home Alone 2?
I just want to say that this was one of two matchups that were in the bracket that I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's fair.
I really don't care about either of these movies at all. But and the other bracket that I didn't care about was one unanimously, so we're not even probably going to talk about it, which I'm fine with. But in this case, I literally put down Home Alone 2 strictly for Tim Curry, but I don't care. So I'm happy to switch over to Pieces of April.
That's fair, Bob.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Pieces of April. I don't see everything Joelle, it was like Joelle was walking through my brain as she as she spoke about Pieces of April. I'm not going to throw away the only Thanksgiving movie on this list for a crappy facsimile version of the original Home Alone with the same beats and some hobo in a park with turtle doves. Like, what the fuck?
Two
turtle doves and a hobo.
It's the line reading. Know. Two turtle doves.
The level of disrespect, far too much. Justice for Pigeon Lady. All right, so Pieces of Lady is being advanced. Happy Holidays, podcast lover. Looking for gift ideas for the pop culture fanatic in your life? Head over to gpcd.threadless.com and shop our designs. T-shirts, mugs, face masks, tote bags, we've got it all. And most of it is customizable. And it's not just our logo. We have sassy slogans and other conversation starters as well. Which reminds us, time to add a shameless plug design for the shop for next year. But for now, check out the store at gpcd.threadless.com. And while you're there, pick up something nice for you. You deserve it. Next, in a unanimous decision, the panel decided to advance The Feel-Good Weeper, The Family Stone, which stood outside of Love Actually's door with a series of signs that said, you're a loser. Also, who cheats on Emma Thompson? I mean, really?
Seriously.
Really?
We should figure out how to do an episode where we just pan Love Actually for 20 minutes, because I would love to do that one day. This is not the moment. But I have notes upon notes about Love Actually.
I
would have walked off this set.
Could we just do a bracket about each storyline in Love Actually and which one is the worst?
I think that's actually a really good idea. Let's put that in the hopper for next holiday season.
And let's bring Amy on that one, because I think she'll have some opinions.
She will lose her mind. It would be spectacular. All right.
Why has this podcast become Let's Torture Amy podcast? I don't understand.
Poor Amy Pilot. We love you, Amy.
We love you, Amy.
Three quarters of us preferred Ralphie's mid-century misadventures in A Christmas Story, but Bob wanted to strap on a fat suit and rep for the Santa Claus and Tim Allen. So, Michael, get out your little Orphan Annie decoder pin and find the secret to advancing Christmas Story. Bob, Tim Allen, and I'm going to have Michael go first.
Thank you.
Well, if he's going to argue for Tim Allen, obviously that's not COVID weight for him.
No.
I don't even know what to say here, because seriously, is there any chance that, like, how, Bob, after all the podcasts that we've been through together, how do you do this to, like, humanity?
Okay, we can pivot. And, like, Bob, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Let me give you a laundry list of the reasons I hate A Christmas Story.
Can I also just jump in and say I'm much more on the fence than originally? So that my vote's winnable. So let's let Bob talk.
Right. Bob, go ahead.
Well, let's start with Bob.
I feel like, yes, I love to hear that from you, Joelle, but I think I was going into this probably on a sinking ship. I mean, I'm the only one that picked it so far off of the bracket. It's a better movie. It's more fun for me. Christmas Story. Can somebody tell me the story of A Christmas Story?
Yes.
Please tell me, somebody.
It's about a kid who really wants to get a specific item for Christmas and is hoping.
Riveting.
That is like a legitimate thing. Like, if you're a kid, like I saw myself in Ralphie. I still see myself in Ralphie. Where's my goddamn BB gun?
it's mostly a bunch of shitty vignettes, though.
That's what I was just going to say. It's all these vignettes that add up to nothing for me. The leg lamp thing is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Like, people are going to hate me. I need to tone it down. The only funny thing about the whole movie. There's literally no story to it. And it relies on this nostalgia, which I don't really have a lot of nostalgia for. I don't know. It just, I feel like they just cobbled together a bunch of little vignettes to trick us into thinking they had this fun little story, and it's just about a kid who wants a gun. See, it's about a kid who wants a gun.
And what's but more anyway, American than that?
It's true. Where Santa Claus is I think it's a lot, very fun. I find it funny. I think it's a cute story that's not like really any other Christmas story. That's a Christmas story, like any other Christmas movie that's really out there. It gives a new version of a Santa Claus story. It gives a little bit of a fun little background to like, oh gosh, this could happen. And there's murder in the beginning. So I love it.
All right, Michael.
Okay, so we're going to start again. Picture it. Hammond, Indiana, Cleveland Street. No, it's okay. So can anybody remind me, what's the name of our podcast again? It's The Great Pop Culture Debate.
Correct.
What has had an actual impact on pop culture for us? Santa Claus with Tim Allen or A Christmas Story? Everybody can quote you that Ralphie wanted an official Red Ryder carbine action 200 shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and a thing that tells time.
I can't do that. Sorry.
I can't tell you that.
But
well, that's because you're a sociopath. But you can also get, like, there are so many things like that. You'll shoot your eye out. Yes. That is something that that people will quote over and over again. The bunny costume, for God's sakes, that Aunt Clara gives him. That has been a how many more people have worn that as a Halloween costume for people? The triple dog dare you, where you're going to stick your tongue to the flagpole. You know, I mean, there are so many references that come out of this movie that have actually become part of the pop cultural canon for us. Plus, it is a story of a family trying to survive the holidays together, which is the same thing that a lot of the other movies that you guys have argued about during the course of this for us. Yes, it focuses on Ralphie and there's a lot of nostalgia in it, but it's a family getting to know each other and be together during the holidays, you know, the same thing that every other family has to go through during the holiday season together.
I also I'm going to point out, because I think this is an important point of discussion here, TBS for years has run Christmas Story back to back to back to back for 24 entire 24 hours on Christmas Day. That wouldn't be happening if it wasn't wildly popular. Now, was that a reason to advance it as the best movie? No, but I think it does underscore Michael's point that as a pop culture item, as a pop culture kind of concept, it is wildly embraced, even if it doesn't do it for panelists on this, which I get because Bob pointed this out. It relies very heavily on not just nostalgia, but specifically boomer nostalgia, white middle-class boomer nostalgia. But I think it does that really well. And like it or not, that's still a significant portion of our population. Joelle.
So I hear you on all of that. I'm going to go back to my age again on this one, but
no, I
was 11 when The Santa Claus came out. And again, as a Jewish kid, I didn't know a shit ton about Santa or Christmas. I knew a little bit. Believe it or not, it was just not in my world. I'd seen parts of The Christmas Story and I knew about the shoot your eye out and the BB gun. It was like hard to avoid, but I didn't know a lot about Santa and I had never read like all the different, you know, books and things and whatnot. And so all of the clever puns from the Santa Claus, I found to be very clever and very, very cute. And the rose, such a clatter.
That's the one that
clatter.
Sticks in my head.
I laughed at it all over again when I watched it recently. The weenie whistle for Judge Reinhold at the end. I can like, that's right up there with the BB gum. I remember the weenie whistle for some reason. Like that sticks with me. There's pieces of that movie that have stuck with me for the last, you know, 27, is that the right number of years? in the same way that I think A Christmas Story has stuck with, you know, other people for 11 extra years. I realize this is a weird thing because it is not the classic A Christmas Story is. Like, it's hard to compare. But as a movie that I can watch again and again, I found A Christmas Story to be really hard to watch in 2021. It felt very Trumpian to me. The BB gun vibes were very, and like those were the days vibes, like, oh, back in the day when you could like, and
make
like,
America
just
great
like
again.
The angry dad fighting with the, you know, the everything about it just felt really gross and just, I don't know, anti-liberal and blah, and I was not a fan, which is so funny to then talk about Tim Allen, who was also Trumpian.
Yes.
So we're really, so that's the problem. That's the problem. We have Tim Allen before we knew he was a dirtbag, and then we have this movie that reminds me of dirtbags. So I don't know.
That's so interesting because like in all honesty, I think there's some projection of that onto Christmas Story because I think the BB gun thing is super innocent. I don't look at it as like a MAGA thing. Like I genuinely, like, and my father would have been around Ralphie's age. I don't think there was anything super like militaristic about it. I think it's just that was the like the way that we wanted Nintendos. Kids in the 1950s wanted BB guns, right?
It's not just the BB gun itself. It's the vibe of the movie. It's the way the family behaved. It's the incredibly racist scene at the end of the movie.
Sure, that's fair.
I'm not going to argue that. Yes,
that scene can die in a fire.
That's fair. I'm sorry, Michael. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, like, Tim Allen, I cannot get past him anymore. And that's not fair either, right? Because, like, he shouldn't ruin an entire movie for me, but I don't see how you separate Tim Allen from Santa Claus. He's as integral to that film as Jim Carrey is to Ace Ventura. And so,
The time, I found him completely lovable, like in 1994, right? I found him completely charming.
I loved Home Improvement.
This was at the height of Home Improvement, yeah. Right?
I was obsessed with that show, but now...
And Toy Story and, you know.
Yeah, I can't. If you asked me this in 1994, I probably would have said Santa Claus, but I can't now. So I think right now, are we split? Is it Michael and I on Christmas Story and Joelle and Bob on Santa Claus?
I mean, I'm annoyingly on the fence, but I'm leaning towards the Santa Claus, which is, I know, infuriating.
Well, I mean, you got to come down on one side now because we got to figure out how we're proceeding. So.
I know. And so if I go with the Santa Claus, it wins because it's the lower seed.
But there's no seeds for this one.
There's no seeds.
So okay.
I think Eric's the tiebreaker, right?
The first one I would be, and then it would go to Bob, then Joelle, then Michael.
So it really doesn't matter. So a Christmas Story would go through either way.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just won't pick.
I understand why it's going forward too, right? I said at the beginning I felt like I was going to be on a sinking ship and defending it. And you know, I think there's shades of what Joelle was saying in it, but you know, I think overall.
I mean, Your Santa Claus has taken. Its problems, too.
Yes, so. Yes, 100%.
Has a bunch of fat scenes that are awful, so.
Yeah. So, just to be clear, would you have forced the tie so I've used my tiebreaker?
I'm forcing the tie, yes.
Okay, so the next tiebreaker will go to Bob. That will probably come in shortly.
Okay.
So, with that being said, we're advancing A Christmas Story. Another 75% division, this time between SNL alums. The bulk of the panel preferred to watch Bill Murray learn the true meaning of a Christmas in Scrooge, while Joelle wanted to stay friends with Will Ferrell's buddy in Elf. Bob, how many fingers does Mrs. Santa Claus have? And why should Scrooge advance? Joelle, why does Elf take your North Pole position? I'm going to have Bob go first.
11. The answer is 11. So for me, Scrooged is the must watch every single year. It is one of my favorite holiday films to watch actually throughout the year. I don't even just watch it at Christmas time because sometimes I just will say a quote to myself from that movie and think to myself, I want to watch that now. Bill Murray is good as he's ever been in a movie. Every single word that comes out of his mouth is a hysterical line. It's a great modernization of that tale, has a great Danny Elfman score. It's well cast. You have Carol Kane as the ghost of Christmas present.
How can you? She was a vision. God.
It's a toaster. Again, quotable. Mm-hmm. For me, to look at these two movies next to each other, you have Bill Murray doing the best Bill Murray, which is he's still playing that character. You have Will Ferrell, to me, doing the worst Will Ferrell. It's like his first major motion picture, one of them at least, and I just can't remove the Will Ferrell from it. It's just 2 hours of him just doing the worst SNL skit acting I've seen, and it's just not a fun movie for me, and I just can't separate those things. So for me, Scrooged is where I'm gonna lean.
All right, Joelle.
Well, fine. I will start by saying Scrooge was just not a significant thing for me. Full disclosure, I think I mixed up several Bill Murray movies from my childhood into like one giant Bill Murray movie. So I just didn't really remember Scrooge. It's more than that thing that Bill Murray was in. And I didn't remember that he was even like a Scrooge storyline. I think, like, was it Howard the Duck? Like, I was very confused. Anyway, I did rewatch it recently and went, oh, okay, that's Scrooged. I couldn't have told you a single thing about it before a couple days ago. Elf is, I find to be a delightful movie. I understand that it is not for everyone. And so I also understand that this might be a losing battle because Will Ferrell is the definition of an acquired taste. Also, Zooey Deschanel is also the definition of an acquired taste. Very much understandable.
Yeah. Yes.
So this was the beginning of Zooey Deschanel before she kind of annoyed half of America and then was beloved by the other half of America.
Yep.
We found out she has the most beautiful singing voice in this movie. But I think what I love about this movie is that it is, by all intents and purposes, a very original plot line, very unexpected, like, you know, little baby turns into this giant elf person and goes off to go figure out where he's from and then teaches the cold, bitter people in New York what this meaning of spirit of Christmas is. And I just find that to be a very cute, sweet story. I think that there's a weird, delightful stop motion component to it, which kind of brings us some little Rankin Bass, you know, throwbacks, which can't hate that. The music in it is fun. There's some great acting character actors in there. We got is it Ed Asner? Is that is that our Santa? There's just so many fun people in it. I think the quotes in that movie are ridiculously fun. Son of a Nutcracker is a great thing you could just shout any time of year, not just at Christmas. And then my favorite thing to just know is that Merriam-Webster specifically credits Elf for the popularity of Ginormous and why it was added to the dictionary in 2007.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Ginormous has been around since the 40s, but Merriam-Webster was like, Elf is why this word has come back to our lexicon and why it's now back in the dictionary or in the dictionary in the first place. Hmm. I don't know. I find the movie to be just fun and cute and delightful. I understand that Scrooge has a much longer beloved history and I will not win this battle, but here we are.
All right.
And I'm not a Will Ferrell hater. Like Anchorman, give me that any day. I think he's playing that character and he's really lost into the whole Anchorman character. It's just this, it was, I couldn't not see Will Ferrell. And that's, I think, what bothered me most about that movie altogether. But I don't want people to think that I like don't like Will Ferrell.
You're forgiven. It's fine. Michael, where are you on this one?
So before I begin my statements, any comments can be directed to my Instagram at THERAX329. I, from the bottom of my soul, hate Elf.
Oh, okay.
I like, it is like one of those, for as much as I love Scrooge, like it is one of my favorite films of all time, but I hate Elf. It is nails on a chalkboard. To me, there's not one single thing. But at the other hand, I have to pretend that I like it every year because the rest of my family likes it. So simply for my own sanity, I smile and nod a lot for 2 hours while we watch this film together. My sister loves this film. I hate it with a passion. It's like, if I could find every DVD copy of it and find where it's on every server, I would burn it.
Well, there you go. But go ahead, Michael.
I know. Tell me how you really feel.
I don't think I felt it enough. Keep going. Keep going.
but I like Scrooged. I think that it's very obvious. Some of my comments at the beginning is that A Christmas Carol is a classic story that's very important to me as a holiday. And this was like in 1988, this was such a fun and unique take on it. The way that they chose to tell the story. You know, Bill Murray, I don't think that there could have been better casting for that. Karen Allen, you know, Carol King, you know, it was across the board. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yes.
Seriously. This was really just amazing casting for it. It was an amazing way to tell the story in a fun way that everybody laughs at and I think has a really good time. Well, except for the soulless Joelle.
I don't hate Scrooge. I just didn't remember it.
Interesting.
But no, I just love it. So it's such a good, but I really do hate Elf. I just can't.
I actually don't hate Elf. I think it's perfectly charming. It just has the misfortune of being up against Scrooged. And I think this is another thing where generationally people who are Gen Xers are probably going to gravitate towards Scrooged in a way that millennials are going to gravitate towards Elf. Because
and they can send me all the hate mail in the world.
I will say, when I was watching it, there were references. I and And I'm someone that thinks I understand lots of Gen X references. I have two older brothers that are Gen Xers. Like I'm aware of the Gen X awareness. There are a lot of references I just straight up didn't get. And I was like, oh, that sucks. That sucks that I don't understand some of this movie that I think other people are very much loving.
I would be so happy to like be your clip notes for this.
I know. I feel like I need to sit with someone to have them like, you know, mansplain it to me. I think I need that for the first time ever. I want someone to mansplain this movie to me.
Can we find a different term than mansplain so it doesn't have a negative connotation? Can I be like your Sherpa for Scrooge?
Yeah.
Because like I love this movie so much, and it's going to advance, by the way. I'm going to guess none of us are going to switch our votes, but we will get more into round two as to why I love Scrooged and why nothing against Elf. I think it's great. It's a modern classic, but to me, this is a no contest because Scrooge.
Yeah, I can't even tell you why I enjoyed it in the later round too, because I did, like I said, enjoy it when I watched it. Yeah,
Bob, you were gonna say something.
Can I just say that like so much of these movies are, and it's not just Christmas movies like this, but so much of these movies are just like right place, right time. You saw it at the right age. You saw it under the right conditions the first time you saw it. Right. Like I think about this a lot when I think about the movie Goonies. Like if you show Goonies to an adult, they're like, boy, that's shit. But if you see it at the right age, you see it at the right time, like it imprints on you and you love it. And it's something you associate with your childhood. This is, you know, it imprints on you these films that you associate with Christmas and things that make you feel warm and cuddly at the holiday time, right? Like this is such a hard debate to go through because it's so much of it comes to your personal preference and what you really feel nostalgic for, I guess, is the best way to put it, right?
What defines holidays for you. Yeah.
And we talked about this. Bob was on last year's version of this, which was the holiday TV special episode. And it was the exact same thing, if you remember, Bob, that holiday movies, I think, like nostalgia exists for all movies, I'm sure. Goonies is a great example of that. But holiday movies in particular, they imprint. I mentioned this in the intro. There is something about them that becomes really personal for you, and that's why you keep revisiting them year after year after year. So it is a little bit you're arguing this is my personal favorite over something that is Joelle's personal favorite. Nobody's right or wrong here. It's just who has more people on their side for it. So sorry, democracy, you've won again. That being said, we are moving Scrooge forward. Finally, in round one, we were evenly split between cautionary tales, with Bob and I preferring holiday horror with Gremlins, and Michael and Joelle going old school with It's a Wonderful Life. Michael, play Zuzu for me and explain why life should get its wings. I will feed the Mogwai after midnight and turn you for Gremlins. I'm going to have Michael go first.
So, like, when I looked across this entire bracket, like, Gremlins, again, was great. I really do enjoy it. I just rewatched it again in advance of doing this and everything. I was like, it gave me that warm, fuzzy Mogwai feeling in the middle of my soul that really turns into a gremlin after midnight. But I really felt like I needed to represent an actual classic holiday film, which is not really on anywhere else on this bracket for us. I think A Wonderful Life is a great story. I think that, you know, George Bailey represents, despite the fact that it's from the period that it's from, it does represent an everyday man kind of thing. And the whole, like, reinvigorating the spirit of Christmas in somebody, you know, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings, and like Clarence, and bringing like that just deep in your soul, warm home for the holidays kind of feeling for you that I think A Wonderful Life brings to everything. If things had been differently, Gremlins would have moved forward against a lot of other films in this on the bracket for me. You know, just like everybody said with Die Hard earlier, like you guys would have moved Die Hard against if it had been up against something else other than Home Alone. Same thing here. Gremlins would have moved forward for me if it had been in a different bracket for things, but up against It's a Wonderful Life, I just can't. It's like really just food for the soul that comes from It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, and Bob, I hope you're not going to be too mad at me, but I do think I'm actually going to switch my vote to Wonderful Life.
I am very mad.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But that's it. I am going to speak on Gremlins because I love it, and I think it deserves some repping. But I just,
absolutely,
spoiler warning, I actually agree with Michael that we would be doing a disservice to this bracket if It's a Wonderful Life did not make at least to Elite Eight, because it's kind of like the Ten Commandments around Easter. Like, it's just a movie that everyone associates with that holiday. And you
I think
cannot...
you mean Passover, Eric. I don't know what you're talking about with Easter.
Thank you. Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much, Joelle. That just made my night.
Thank you. I am extremely, what's the word? Trash. That's the word I'm looking for. So let me talk about Gremlins. Gremlins is completely unlike anything else that we have on this list. Michael kind of addressed this earlier. What's our only horror film here? But if you're tired of sweet, emotional holiday films and you want something a little bit with a little bit more bite, Gremlins is here for you. The puppets and the special effects in Gremlins are still amazing. Like, what, 30 years later almost? Gizmo remains completely adorable. Howie Mandel is his voice, by the way, in case you did not know this. The gremlins themselves are puckishly charming, even as they're slaughtering dim-witted suburbanites. And a reminder that none of this movie would have happened if Billy's father had just bought his kid something practical. And that is really the underlying message, by American. That's what I'm saying.
Also, none of that would have happened.
Careful
if,
what you wish for.
Corey, what's his face, hadn't just poured a bunch of water on the ground. He just had to keep his water
that
in a cup.
That was Corey Feldman.
Yep, Corey Feldman. Just had to keep his water in a cup. That's it.
Finally, I will say this, Phoebe Cates. Just Phoebe Cates.
Yes.
And that amazing monologue she delivers about.
In both Gremlins.
Yes.
In both Gremlins.
Yes.
She's, that monologue should be an acting class monologue, by the way, because it is so good the way she delivers it. She's perfection. And Bob suggested to me while we were working on this, he's like, we should have the best Phoebe Cates debate. And I was like, Phoebe Cates film debate. I was like, yes, we should. Underrated gem of Phoebe Cates. But with that being said, I do agree with the argument that, in terms of Christmas films, It's a Wonderful Life has to advance here. Bob, are you going to be sore over that?
So a couple things. We're on the best holiday film bracket, not the best Christmas film bracket.
Fair.
Gremlins. Here's the thing for me, and it's a Wonderful Life. It is a wonderful movie. I actually just watched it for the first time for this bracket, and I said to myself, wow, that's really great.
It's
that's
so
a
well
really
made.
Good movie. It Donna is. Reed. And Jimmy Stewart?
James?
Yes.
James
Jimmy,
Stewart?
But he's credited as James Stewart.
James Stewart. I have not seen a better pair on screen from that era than those two. I thought they were wonderful together. I thought the story was really good from beginning to end. It has that kind of stop and go of some of those old movies where mm-hmm. it's like, oh, it's going to fade to black. And then we fade up on a new kind of section of their life or the story, right? Mm-hmm. People love it and love to watch it at the holidays. I know there's a portion of it that takes place at Christmas, but it's not a holiday movie. I guess Gremlins, to your point, is unlike anything on this bracket. It is actively a Christmas or holiday movie. It opens with holiday songs. It's one of the play over the credits. It is very much Christmas throughout that entire film. I don't know. I'm just trying to throw my last whatever at Gremlins, that I agree with everything you say about A Wonderful Life, but I don't relate it as a holiday movie.
Can I give you one little piece of convincing evidence
sure.
for you?
I'm going to lose either way.
I know, but can I just tell you, in the first 8 minutes of the movie Gremlins, the mother is cooking in the kitchen, and what do you think is on the TV that she's watching?
It's A Wonderful Life.
The last 5 minutes of It's A Wonderful Life.
Yep.
In Christmas Vacation, they're watching the angel gets its wings.
Yep.
And the reason that it's always that section of the movie is because that's the only section of that entire movie that has to do with Christmas.
But it's also, I mean, thematically, I think it is very resonant for the holiday season. And I don't want to go too much into it because we'll go into it in round two as it advances. Yes. But Bob, I am sorry. I let you down.
No, it's good.
I'm not repping for Gremlins, but...
For all of the all the complaints that like Joelle and I had like with the Christmas story, this is an old kind of... like old version of America that's not as icky.
That is such a good point. And I want to hold on to that because it's a great thing to discuss as we go into round two. And with that, we are going to close out round one. We're going to take a break to check if our shitter's full. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to round two of our best holiday film debate. While we were gone, I was visited by three spirits who taught me how to live, laugh, and love. Speaking of communing with people who you can't see, I wanted to ask my panel, how can people find you on social media? Bob?
Well, if you want to complain to me, you can find me at Eric Resnia on Twitter.
Sorry. Spell it, Bob.
I am at DisNerdBob at all those things that you could use, like the Twitter and the Instagram and all of that. So at DisNerdBob.
Great, Joelle.
Well, if you want to tell me what your least favorite scene from Love Actually is, or if you want to yell at me about any of my opinions, you can find me at JoelleTB on Twitter. And if you want to follow Animal Crossing news, I'm at The Pocket Pod on Twitter.
And please don't yell at Joelle. She's lovely. and Michael, how about you?
All elf hate mail can go to Therax329. That's Therax329 on Instagram.
Great. And as for me, you should definitely follow at Great Pop Culture Debate on Instagram and at @culture_debate on Twitter, but also feel free to follow at Eric Resniak on Instagram. Moving on to the debates. First up, we have National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation versus Home Alone. And I believe we are unanimous that the nope. Dysfunctional Griswold clan. What was that? Is that a nope?
That was a no for me, mister.
Ooh, okay. Ooh, I'm going to back it up.
It's on. So,
okay, we're going to take a step back and see why Joelle's wrong.
We were unanimous that the dysfunctional Griswold clan and its hellish holiday season outmatches the McAllisters and their casual criminal negligence. But Joelle, go on. Go off.
I had a big old change of heart after watching the Griswolds have their Christmas vacation in the last few days. This was the reason my husband said, boy, that JTT movie was better than this.
What?
What?
Madness. What?
And I went, wait, what? And then I watched it and I was like, yep, no, I can see why you're bored out of your mind. It is a slow movie. It is a slow movie. And if you don't like Chevy Chase, which, you know, here we are, Chevy Chase is not a fun person to watch 40 years later. Is it 30 something years later? I can't math.
30 something. It was 1989, so it's 32.
Yeah, 32 years later. Yeah. Chevy Chase sucks, but anyway, National Lampoon, he was beloved at a time, but now he kind of sucks.
He does suck currently.
Agreed.
It's true.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. I don't have to do any more than that. Watching this movie was less fun than I remember. Now, there are scenes, beloved scenes that I find completely nostalgia worthy that I understand why the love is still there. And I was right there. I was like cracking up at the lights, at the holiday lights and all the antics of getting the lights to turn on and the Julia Louis-Dreyfus falling out of her bed and all the glass breaking and the squirrel in the house. And there's so many great moments. I get it. But there were also scenes that made me want to like just bite, I don't know, pencils in half. I was so angry. The cat scene was more traumatizing than I remember, probably because I'm a cat mom now. Mm-hmm. Clark Griswold waxing nostalgic about all things Christmas. I just wanted him to shut his yap and let other people talk once in a while. I found the whole thing about him not managing his money well to be incredibly boring and stupid. And like, he's just a ridiculously dumb human being. I don't know. I just found him unlikable. And then I went back and was like, nope, I really still like Home Alone better than this. And that was where it was. Like, if I'm going to watch a movie once a year, every year, I'm going to watch Home Alone. If I'm going to watch a movie once every 5 to 10 years, National Lampoon.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you that Clark Griswold is unlikable and an idiot. He is both of those things. I don't like Michael and Bob. Do you watch the movie because of Clark?
No.
No, like
I watch for Beverly D'Angelo.
Absolutely.
Of course. And Juliette Lewis.
Can I get a version of the movie without him ogling the ladies' boobs in the pool scene? Because I would kill
that is
for
problematic.
That. I would kill for that scene to just burn in a fire.
It's funny because as we're now describing it, like
that's
his character is kind of the perfect encapsulation of douchebag white bro in the 1980s.
But that's also National Lampoon, right?
It is. But I actually love because this movie is him suffering.
Yes.
Like an endless buffet of suffering right. For Clark Griswold. It's like a constant comeuppance for being an entitled prick.
But
am
but
I
like
wrong?
Everyone hugs him and everyone loves him and they celebrate him and his boss gives in and gives him his bonus anyway. And Brian Doyle Murray shouldn't have given up like that. It's Brian Doyle Murray. Stick to your guns, Brian Doyle Murray. I love Brian Doyle Murray.
Anybody. Capitalism. Give me somebody while I'm waiting.
Well, I just need to say this, Joelle. First of all, will you do me a favor and just pause and go make sure there's not a gas leak in your home? Because the idea that this movie is boring, like, no, it can be argued of many things, and problematic certainly is among them. I mean, we talked about Chevy Chase, but Randy fucking Quaid. I mean, does it get more problematic than that?
No.
But the movie itself, and weirdly, I can separate this movie from those two more than I can separate The Santa Claus from Tim Allen. The movie, I think, is really more of an ensemble piece. Yes, Chevy is the lead character, but holy shit, like every second and tertiary character in this film is hilarious. There are times that like even dumb lines that aren't funny are super funny because of the way that they are delivered. Like the Ellen's mother, who's played by Doris Roberts, word out of her mouth in that movie, even if it is like pay by check, not by credit card, like she's so funny because of the way she delivers it in this boozy at like 9:30
and they're all
in the
drunk
morning.
And martinis on the lawn. I know like those parts are lovely. I get it, and they're all wearing stupid hats and they're drinking out of reindeer glasses, all that. I get they're like those are the parts I love, but then I was just irritated for the other half of the movie.
Heavy chase parts, which I mean, your mileage may vary, I'll give you that. Yes. But I love the fact that, again, even the parts that are mostly Chevy is him suffering. And I take pleasure in it. Bob, where are you on this?
I think both of these movies are very similar in the fact that they're both families that I think lots of people can relate to. And you can relate to kind of like just the dread of the holidays of being with family and being with people who you love, but also sometimes really hate. Mm-hmm. I talked about the imprinting in the first half of this debate where like you see it at the right place, right time. I was far too young to see National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation the first time I saw it.
Same.
So that's why I absolutely fucking love it to death. It's just so funny. So quotable. It's, I shouldn't say this, but kids can love it and adults. And I think kids and adults both love Home Alone, but I think it's a little too sweet for me. Mm. In the end, I like a little bit more misery in my holiday film.
You know, these two movies came out less than a year from each other, actually. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How interesting.
But with very different
And they're both
audiences.
John Hughes films.
Yeah. They're both written by John Hughes. Right. Yeah. But one's National Lampoon and one is Chris Columbus. Yeah.
One is for adults and one's really for families.
I think, Eric, for me, you hit it with regards to the ensemble cast piece of this, right? Like, it's just everybody is on their game. This is by far the best Lampoon's movie Yes.
So, I mean, that I can agree with.
Michael, where are you?
Oh, I honestly am still flabbergasted that we're even having this debate.
In Joelle's defense, it's not like
Joelle is entitled, as we say at the Great Pop Culture Debate, you're entitled to your opinion no matter how wrong it might be.
Yeah, my point though is like it's up against Home Alone, which is a very good movie. It's just this is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
And I disagree. Like, I mean, Home Alone's an okay, but it's not a great movie as far as I'm concerned, you know. But I think I said this at the beginning, I like a little bit more definitely offbeat, not the kind of like cookie cutter films that are. Home Alone's not a film that I watch year after year after year. I might watch it. This is my once every 5 to 10 years, I might throw on Home Alone if I have nothing else and I've been through everything else. But okay. I think Christmas Vacation is a perfect film for like, it really talks about everything that we hated about the 80s, the everything that was about it. And it makes fun of all of it. And I think that that is the satirical nature that comes out of, you know, National Lampoon. They wanted to make fun of everything that everybody loved about the 80s, the consumerism, the like every single thing about it.
It really does kind of revel in how awful the upper middle class white America suburbanites were. Like, it really pillories that community in a way that not a lot of films were at that time, if we're being honest.
Correct. Yeah.
Which I think is great.
Can I say, like, both of these films should probably be Final Four films, and unfortunately we have them pitted against one another here. That. This is really an unfortunate pair.
It is,
and
I agree.
And I'm regretting putting Home Alone 2 in my bracket, because this would have been a much higher seed, or whatever, not go down a seed, but whatever we did here, it would have been much higher on the list had I put Home Alone 1 on the bracket. So I could only have myself to blame here.
It's okay. So I think, Joelle, we are 3-1 for National Lampoon. So we're going to move one forward.
Just justice for Catherine O'Hara and her lovely. She's my movie mother. That's what I refer to her as.
She has a chance in the next round.
I was going to say, speaking of which, she's not gone yet, because she's still
not
here.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
versus Pieces of April. I believe right now it is 3-1 in favor of Nightmare.
Oh, I'm going to lose every round here, I think.
I was about to say, Joelle, I need you to prepare yourself, because things are not looking great for
you. Am I the Curtis of this round, of this one?
Yes, you are.
You might be, or the Ama, depending on how you want to play
Ama.
This.
I'm either Curtis or Ama, depending.
Amy also.
Yes. Or Amy. I feel for all three of them right now.
So, Joelle, do you want to make a last-ditch pitch for April, or at this point, is anyone swayable?
I mean, all I can say is that Nightmare Before Christmas, like, it is the story of someone who does not understand Christmas, someone who is tired of his Halloween life, and he's trying to figure something else out. And he goes and he steals Christmas and he ruins Christmas. And then at the end of it, he like figures out how to like quickly save Christmas and like let Santa Claus go. I just like it. He doesn't actually understand Christmas, and it does. I don't get the Christmas vibes. All the music is Halloween to me. It's not very Christmassy to me. I don't listen to the soundtrack outside of the Halloween season. I don't watch this movie outside of the Halloween season. I love this movie right now. We are recording this on November 2nd. This is Halloween right now. I am into this movie today. I am not into this movie 4 weeks from now.
Interesting. And I would say I think of it equally at both holidays. I really do. Mm-hmm. To me, 100%. It's not one or the other.
Agreed.
Bob and Michael, are you going to? I have a 0.0% chance of switching my vote to Pieces of April. Michael and Bob.
I love Pieces of April. I don't think it's as rewatchable or as really indicative of the full holiday season as Nightmare Before Christmas is. And again, Nightmare Before Christmas is like one of my all time favorite films of all time. You can go see the Tim Burton episode if you'd like, even though I even struggled to have it on the Tim Burton list because he didn't direct it.
Mm-hmm. I could talk about that too. But anyway,
and Michael,
there is no way that you would ever change my mind about this.
So I'm sorry, Joelle, for the second time in a row, but you can take
Catherine
O'Hara. Catherine O'Hara, right?
Catherine O'Hara.
Me and Moira Rose will go and have a few drinks. It'll be fine.
Tinfoil lining.
It's the bracket where she currently is.
Next, we are evenly split between A Christmas Story and The Family Stone. Bob, dig for votes for Stone, the way that Sarah Jessica Parker sounds like she's digging for clams. Well, I will explain that if we dismiss Christmas Story, we'll be shooting our eye out. Bob, do you want to go ahead and lead us through this one?
So both of these would be considered ensemble casts, but for me, ensemble casts are my sweet spot. I absolutely love a big cast with lots of people, lots of actors, lots of characters. Everybody's great in this movie. I do a lot. Some people will argue about this movie, Family Stone, a little bit, that it's like, gosh, could this family have more like more diversity to it, right? Like you want diversity in your cast, but it's like they've got everything in this family. You want it, they've got it. I know that could be a criticism of it, but I think it's just such an interesting ensemble of different people with different kind of going on different walks of life. You know, I think everybody's really good in this. Sorry, I lost my momentum. Sorry, folks.
If you want me to help, I can. Let me know.
Yep. No, you're good. You're good. You know, I think everybody in this cast is exceptional. I think Diane Keaton is giving one of the best performances that she's ever given. I think that Joelle, can you step in here? I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. I would say Rachel McAdams is like the highlight of this entire movie. She is the most relatable character. She's like what I think is the audience surrogate, like looking at her whole kooky family and judging everyone top to bottom. I think Sarah Jessica Parker is oddly enough, like, I didn't think she was going to be the villain of the movie. And then you watch this movie and you're like, oh no. And then they figure out how to make her likable at the end. And it's incredible. I think this movie is a fun watch beginning to end multiple times in a row, which is unexpected for a movie of this type. I also think the rom-com aspects of this movie are superfluous to the family aspects of this movie, which is what makes it a proper holiday movie, because I don't think you need it to be a rom-com to be a holiday, or I don't think it needs to be a rom-com, you know, as much as it needs to be a family movie for it to be a holiday movie, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Has Claire Danes ever looked so pretty?
Oh my God, Claire Danes is incredible. She just waltzes into this movie and you're like, okay, can she just run the show from now on? She just steals the show, and Dermot Mulroney does not know what to do with himself, and it's great. I don't know. Everyone in this movie is fantastic, and I wanted to punch Sarah Jessica Parker, which is great, because who doesn't at some point in their life?
Never.
Oh, I do. Uh-oh.
Come on.
This might be the only point that Joelle and I agree on about this movie.
You've never watched every episode of Sex and the City and at some point wanted to punch Sarah Jessica Parker? Yeah, please.
I'm a bad homosexual. I've never watched Sex and the City for the most part. Oh.
Like, I get it. I get Carrie. I get her. And I understand, like, she's a flawed protagonist. But that is neither here nor there, because we're not talking about that.
Yeah, that's not relevant, I guess. But anyway, the point is, this weird NPR family, incredibly liberal, can't handle this lady coming out of, you know, conservative, I don't know, other side of Connecticut, I guess.
Connecticut, just, drink.
Yep. I'm just going to drop Connecticut left and right around here. I don't know. This movie is just delightful and fantastic. And I could watch it over and over again. And it doesn't make me angry the way A Christmas Story does. So here we are.
It's interesting because I find, and don't get me wrong, The Family Stone is a comedy. It does make me laugh. But what I think is so special about this movie, I was bawling when I watched this movie in the theater. I was actually, like, heaving sobs with the
Diane Keaton story. I do remember that the first time. You don't cry after the first time.
No.
Did we see it together?
No, I saw it when I was in Virginia. So it definitely was on, and that was part of why I was crying. I could not get home for the holidays because work would not let me off. And it was a very difficult time for my family. And I'm sitting there watching this in the theater, just sobbing openly. It was very embarrassing, but welcome to my life. So I think it's a great movie. I love this movie. But I'm putting it up against A Christmas Story. And I understand the concerns that you all have for Christmas Story. And I think I don't need to tell you your opinions are valid, right? Thank you, Eric, for validating my opinions. But I think that there is a lot of incredibly memorable moments that are embedded in Christmas Story, like it or not. And Family Stone has very few of those. It is overall a really well-told tale that's both funny and very emotional. But Christmas Story is scene after scene after scene that are, take a drink, iconic. Michael, did you want to say anything else?
I'm going to preface this by saying, Amy Pilot, this is for you. I'm going to walk out. I swear to God, if this happens the way that I think this is going to happen. Like, Amy, I swear to God, I now think I truly understand the soul of Amy Pilot at the moment.
Go ahead.
A Family Stone is a okay film for me. It is not, it's about a dysfunctional family, but it doesn't scream Christmas for me. I am going to disagree wholeheartedly with Bob and Joelle on this one for you. I will probably never watch this movie again after having rewatched it for, like, this podcast for us. But A Christmas Story I will watch year after year because it is such a part of the cultural canon for a lot of reasons that we've seen everything. And I've made those points earlier when we were arguing about A Christmas Story versus The Santa Claus.
Joelle, can I make something?
Can I make a case for the fact that this is the final movie on the list that was created after the year 2000?
Really? Is that true? Everything else.
We have 1989, 1993, this is 2005, and then Christmas Story is 83, Scrooge and Wonderful Life, 88, and 1946.
Interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I do think we are deadlocked right now. Are we? Are we not?
We are.
And that means that Bob is the tiebreaker. And Bob, I do not want you to feel pressure for that. And Michael is not going to walk off the podcast.
This reminds me of a story.
Oh my God.
Last year, I was on the best holiday special.
Yes.
And I was in this exact position.
Bring it back, Bob. Bring it back.
Where it was Rudolph against Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
And they dragged me for how could you not pick Rudolph? How could you not pick Rudolph? How could you not pick it?
Follow your heart, Bob.
And that's exactly, I think, what I might do. Like,
you have my support.
I'm not emotionally.
Joelle, don't get too far ahead of yourself. I see what you did to the bracket.
I'm not emotionally moved in any way by A Christmas Story, right? They're both of these movies, I guess, are. Yeah, I won't say that. The Family Stone for me is a really wonderful movie with a great cast and a great performance, is a great story, and it makes me feel something in the end. Again, the vignettes of A Christmas Story, they don't have any impact on me whatsoever. And I get the iconic moments piece. I'm not trying to debate the best iconic moments movie.
We also have other movies left on this list that have plenty of iconic moments.
Correct.
You are correct. We're moving.
And Family Stone is not one of them.
But
it's Christmas, and you know what I want for Christmas? The Family Stone in the Final Four.
Okay, and here's the thing. When I'm looking at the future of this bracket, I don't think it ultimately matters, is my guess.
No, it doesn't.
But regardless, if you feel hot about that, that's okay. This is the holidays, and we're allowed to be angry at each other.
I mean, here's the thing. If I had my way, the Family Stone wouldn't even have been the one on this list to fit this bill. There were seven other movies that were better than the Family Stone.
Yeah, how did this movie even end up on here?
I'll tell you.
I was honestly surprised it
did. I added it because I saw other people were adding it, and I wanted to make sure a movie like this ended up on the list.
Oh. I stand by it being on the list. I actually think it is a very good movie. Is it a Final Four movie?
I stand by it too.
I'm not sure, but we will acknowledge the fact that there are several cases in this bracket where it was unfortunate matchups that were too intense, and then there were other ones where it's like, well, I don't really care about either one of these advancing. So in the interest of time, we're going to advance Family Stone. I'm sorry, Michael. I'm sorry to the Christmas Story fans. You can come at us, TBS, come at me at my on Twitter.
Characters welcome.
With that being said, finally, it's Bill Murray Scrooged up against It's a Wonderful Life. And right now, people tell me if I'm wrong, 3/4 of the panel has Scrooge hitting George Bailey in the face with a toaster. Joelle, are you still sticking with It's a Wonderful Life?
I am. I have to. This is a lovely, lovely movie, and I just want to see it through. I'm sorry. I have to. I saw it for the first time, like Bob, very recently, but it's been in my life for as long as I can remember without even knowing it. And I was amazed by how witty the dialogue was for 1946. I had no idea how smart this was. Frank Capra is better than I realized. I guess he's the director. These three people that wrote it, including Frank Capra, are better than I realized.
So I think this one's going to come down to also people in the audience listening to this and saying, WTF. How is It's a Wonderful Life being beaten out for Final Four? But I'm going to go with Bob here. I have to go with my heart and my gut. And I'm talking about personally which film I will watch over and over and over again. I'm going to go with Scrooged. All day, all night. It's a Wonderful Life is a wonderful film. And I'm glad it made Elite Eight. But yes, it is one of the like classic, iconic Christmas films. But I'm not sure, for audiences under the age of 40, it is as important as it was for people over the age of 40. And I think, yes, it's kind of been used over and over and over again in other properties. It's referenced in movies on this list. But I don't see why that should be necessarily why it continues to the Final Four. Michael, where are you?
I'm sticking with Scrooge because it is going to be the only Christmas Carol type movie that's going to make it for it. I love A Wonderful Life, and I argued very much for it the last round, but Scrooged is what's going to move forward for me.
And thank you. That's a good argument, pointing out that it's essentially a Christmas Carol, and therefore it is a
more classic
heir
than A Wonderful Life.
Yeah, that's a great
point.
Well,
it's funny because It's a Wonderful Life has a little bit of A Christmas Carol vibes in it, right? Because they show him what life would be like without him. It's a little bit, obviously it's not the same thing at all, but you know, there's that part where Clarence is like, well, here's what the whole town would have been like if you didn't exist. And you know, showing him if his life had been different or not existent.
Totally see that. It's basically like the powers that be intervening in a man's life to try to change course, through the spirit of Christmas. Like, I can 100% see those parallels.
Angels or ghosts, the same idea.
Sure. Bob, are you sick of Scrooged?
Of course I am.
Yes. So, Joelle, I'm sorry, that was a rough round two for you.
I mean, one out of four. It's better than some.
So we have a final four of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation versus The Nightmare Before Christmas and The Family Stone versus Scrooged. If you have very intense thoughts about that, please reach out to the podcast on Twitter and Instagram. We'd love to have conversation with you. This is always the start of a conversation, not the be all and end all. I'm going to go around the horn for the first matchup, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation versus Nightmare Before Christmas. Bob, where are you going?
Surprisingly, I'm going to pick National Lampoon's over Nightmare Before Christmas.
Okay. Joelle.
Unsurprisingly, I'm definitely not voting for Nightmare. So National Lampoon.
Okay. And Michael.
National Lampoon.
Wow. We had unanimous decision. Look at us. We're growing like a family. We're coming together. It's the Christmas miracle, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so it's a unanimous National Lampoon that advances to the final two. And I'm sure this is going to be an interesting one, too. Family Stone versus Scrooge. We're going to go reverse order. Michael, I can't imagine what you're going to pick here.
Don't you people dare even think about it. Joelle, I can.
We're interchangeable, but we're not interchangeable.
I can feel your thoughts all the way over here.
You don't know me.
You didn't know her life.
I'm going with Scrooged, obviously.
All right, Joelle.
Believe it or not, I just wanted to see A Christmas Story go, and I wanted to see a rom-com / family drama make it somewhere to the top, but I'm going with Scrooged too, because it is much more a holiday movie, I agree.
Amazing.
I like you again.
Bob?
Bob Goulet's old-fashioned Cajun Christmas. I'm picking Scrooged.
Amazing. Okay, so after all of that Sturm und Drang in round two, we have unanimous decisions in round three.
It's a SNL versus SNL over here.
This is a wild ride. Okay, final two, National Lampoon versus Scrooged. I have to say, personally, on a meta perspective, these are the two movies I have to watch every year.
Yes.
Every single year.
You rig this whole damn thing, Eric. I knew it. You do it every time.
I don't do it every time, but I might have done it this time. And I will say, ask Bob, ask people who have known me for many years, I quote both of these movies constantly, whether it's Christmas or not. They are both highly quotable films. They are both fantastic in production value, in casting, in writing, I think in pacing. Joelle might disagree, but I'm going to go around the horn, and this time we're going to start with Joelle. Which one wins?
Well, this one's tough because Brian Doyle Murray is in both of these, and one of these, he's in it more than the other. And because I'm a big fan of Brian Doyle Murray, listen to my other podcast if you want to know why. I'm going to have to go with National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Interesting. All right. I'm going to have Michael go second.
This is so hard for me because I do love both of them, but I think when it comes down to it, the core of my Christmas being is that the ghost did it all in one night. So I'm going to go with Scrooged.
Bob.
So to your point, Eric, absolutely need to watch these movies every single year. I actually watch Scrooge, as I said earlier, I watch it multiple times a year whenever I'm in the mood or randomly make a quote from it, like how many fingers does Mrs. Santa Claus have here? There's a distinct difference, I think, in these two movies, is in that I think Scrooged has a little bit more, I don't know if sophistication is the right word for it. It's a true holiday tale. Right. It's a Christmas story that's very known and beloved with a modern twist, with really smart casting, really smart writing. It's not playing to the lowest common denominator in any way. At moments, it probably is. For example, you see, you can't see her nipples and she's really trying.
And they're really trying.
And they're really trying. Or have you tried Staples? But there's just, for me, Christmas Vacation, as much as I love it, it's a little too manic, a little too messy for me to see that it's a better movie than Scrooged. I don't know. If we want to go down to like, what's the best holiday movie? Is it about being a good movie? Is it about the nostalgia of a holiday film? I don't know how. I think I balance both of those things with Scrooged.
Yeah.
So I'm going with Scrooged.
So this is a really hard one for me, and I'm not going to allow a tie. I will not do that. So here's what I'm going to say. I think Scrooged has more heart to it. And I think if we're talking mm-hmm. about which one of these movies will you finish and have an upbeat feeling and have that Christmassy feeling that you're looking for, you get that in Scrooged with the Annie Lennox sing-along, put a little love in your heart at the end. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about scenes, I mean, this is kind of the argument against Christmas Story that you guys used, was lots of little vignettes, except those all, the ones in Christmas Vacation, all do have a purpose and all do line up to tell the plot. But it really is a bunch of different vignettes, right? Like,
yeah.
The whole ladder scene is not actually important to the plot, but it's funny as hell when the ice thing with that sound effect that will never not make me laugh shoots out and blows up their stereo. Like, yeah. Oh my God. That's amazing.
The ice cannon right into their bedroom. Yes. Yeah.
And then Julia Louis-Dreyfus with the, and what, why is the floral wet, Todd?
I don't know, Margot.
And then, like the squirrel in the tree, turkey that is incinerated, and they're all there like chewing on the like naugahyde turkey. We mentioned the sledding scene. There's also really funny lines when like he takes Eddie shopping and he brings up the fact that Eddie has no money, and he's like, oh, all the money's gone. He's like, well, what happened to all that money you sent to that preacher who was screwing the hockey guy? He's like, oh, he can fend for himself. Like, there's just so many stupid lines that are so funny. I think Christmas Vacation.
Oh, mother.
Christmas Vacation. Oh, yeah. Your mother waxes her upper lip? Yeah, she has 3 years. Doesn't show. Like, that is such a burn. I think the writing is funnier in Christmas Vacation, and it has more funny moments. But what is a better holiday film? I think it's Scrooged, because we've mentioned Carol Kane multiple times, but also mm-hmm. Buster Poindexter is amazing as the Ghost of Christmas Past. And that whole sequence in the 1950s in the studio is really, really well done. And you've got John Forsythe playing the Bob Cratchit character, which is fucking perfect. And then the Ghost of Christmas Future is terrifying in that movie. And there's the part where he's walking like to see the incinerator and like the walls are sliding in on him. Like, that was really good filmmaking. It was really effective. And Karen Allen's amazing, by the way, in that
film. Wendy Malick. Briefly.
There's so many, like,
Mary Lou Retton as Tiny Tim.
Exactly. The Solid Gold Dancers.
Everyone's favorite old fart.
Read the book. The Pope blessing the entire Zulu nation. Like, it's also really ridiculous, but in the best possible ways. So that's where I'm coming down on this. I think you will argue, and I will agree with you, that National Lampoon's is funnier and has more iconic scenes, but I think Scrooged on the whole is a better holiday movie, and that's why I'm going with Scrooged.
I think if I can just add, because I haven't talked about Scrooged at all, and like I said, I hadn't watched it until recently. It is a brilliant movie, right? Like, it's meta more than I actually expected it to be. Yeah. Like, the way it references itself within itself with the movie within the movie, and all of the different cameos that they have, including the ones I don't understand, but I recognize that they are still cameos. I think there's something for everyone. So, you know, while not all of those things are for me, it sounds like there's something for everyone on this panel. The Ghost of Christmas Future scared the crap out of me, but it mm-hmm. sounds like that's what some people like about Christmas. You want horror yes. in your Christmas. Great.
Thank you.
I want Carol Kane in everything. So that was for me, that she was exactly for me. And I want Mary Lou Retton in everything too. So she was also for me. Those two parts of the movie were for me, and that was probably it. And that's okay.
Also, Mama Fratelli is in this.
Brian Doyle Murray 4 second cameo was for me as well.
Correct.
That was Little House on the Prairie. Was it the homecoming episode? Yes, it was the homecoming episode.
All right. So I think right now it's 3 for Scrooged, 1 to National Lampoon. Am I correct?
Yeah, but that's okay. So I can live with it.
I don't think we're going to get to consensus, but I do think that we have a winner. So there you have it, folks. Our pick for the best holiday film of all time is Scrooged. Do you agree with our choice? Do you think this was a silly waste of resources? Let us know your pick by leaving a comment on this episode at greatpopculturedebate.com or yell at us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. While you're there, make sure that you like and subscribe for more great pop culture debate content. I want to say thank you to my panelists. You are always welcome at the Resniak Family Christmas, although I would not wish that on my worst enemy. And thank you for listening. Until next time, remember, everyone is entitled to their wrong opinions, and we hope you have a wonderful holiday season.
We worked really hard, Eric.
So do washing machines.